sometimes you gotta think like a lady.
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 And act like a boss.
Welcome to Think Like a Lady. You can follow us on Twitter at @ThinkLikeALady_ or on Facebook at @ThinkLikeALadyPodcast, as well as on Instagram at @ThinkLikeALady_podcast. We're available to listen to on all the major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or just ask Amazon Alexa. Welcome back to Think Like a Lady. This is Afroz.
And this is Dua.
Last week, we talked about just casual conversations between Dua and I. And this week, we have Arij on our podcast to discuss life after divorce. Arij has a heartbreaking yet empowering story of her divorce, the court battles that she went through, and a story that
Hi guys, my name is Arij, and I am 31. I lived most of my life in Palestine, and now I live in the U.S. I have two daughters.
Well, Arij, so let's start from the beginning of your story, because this podcast is, it is women-centric, and, when it comes to divorce, we already know that is a very tough predicament, especially more so for women than men to deal with, because that's just, the nature of things. And, of course, the world is exponentially more unfair to women. Why don't you start with just an overview of how you and your ex-husband met and the toxic signs that you feel that you missed as you were getting to know him in the courting phases until you finally married
him? Yes, sure. So, we met back in 2007. He saw my picture at my sister's house, and he was interested in me. He called and he said, he talked to my dad, and he was like, "Can I come to meet your daughter?" My dad asked me, and I said, "I want to see a photo first." And I see him, and he's a very handsome man. So I say, "Yes, I would like to meet him." And at the time, I was 17, and I understand that 17 sounds extremely young. However, back home, living in a small village, 17 is like okay to get engaged or to get married. That was like 14 years ago, too. So he came down. I met him. I really liked his looks. And as a 17-year-old girl, like, I didn't really know what marriage means and what do you actually look for in a partner. So I was like, "Oh my god, he's very handsome," and that was like enough for me. So we get engaged, and then he leaves to the US. In the engagement, I did feel a little bit uncomfortable with certain things. Like, he didn't want to come down to visit me. He didn't care to like make an effort. He was still very nice. Like, the way I met, like, when I met him the first month and we got engaged, he was extremely nice. Like, I wasn't wearing the scarf back then, and he was okay with it. He was very happy, and I was happy. So I was like, okay. I mean, he's telling me he wants to live a very Islamic life, but maybe because he lives in the U.S. and that's where he was born and raised, then, he has an open mind to it, where like, okay, I'm not going to force it on her. And if she wants to do it on her own, then that's great. I had this mentality, like, and this thought of people who were raised in the U.S. And the fact that he was okay to get engaged to a girl who wasn't a hijabi or like, wasn't really practicing. And then a year later, we got married. And then after I moved in with him to the U.S., even before, like the 2 weeks we stayed in Palestine right after the wedding, it was just like horrible. It was so miserable. Like, the treatment was just...
The horrible treatment started 2 weeks right after the wedding.
The horrible treatment started at the wedding day. So at the wedding day, at that time, we were engaged for a year. And I was like, okay, like, you know, my fiance wants to live an Islamic life. So I actually said, you know what? I want to surprise him and I want to wear the scarf. So I was like, I'm going to do this. He was really happy about it. And on the wedding day, when I was getting out of my parents' house, I noticed he was like right next to me and kept like covering my face. It wasn't even covering my hair. He was covering my face because he didn't want men to see my makeup. And I'm like, and I was telling him, like, I can't see. Like, let me walk. Like, I can't see. And he didn't care. Like, he kept just covering my face. Yeah. So the wedding day. And then after this, like, you know, the treatment, like, you know, being very cheap with money started early on as well. So... And he was really strict about, like, dressing up. He started telling me, like, oh, you have to wear, like, something called jilbab, which is, like, one piece of garment. It's, like, it starts from your shoulders all the way to your toes. And he always, like, whenever we want to buy those, so they usually come, they have buttons all the way going down. And usually the buttons stop right by the knees, like, you know, maybe a little bit lower than the knees. And he would ask them to add like two or three more buttons because he wanted it buttoned all the way to my toes, which makes walking very hard. So I noticed that, like, he made them altered, and he made sure that I don't buy small because I'm petite. He made sure I buy a bigger size. He made sure that I'm buying dark colors. He made sure it was, like, the thickest material out there. And I'll be like, but why can't I get this one? He'll be like, no, 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 the color is too shiny, or the color is too bright. Or, okay, why can't I get a small? Oh, no, 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 your shape, we can't show your shape. Why can't I get this, like, easier material that's a little bit thinner? Oh, because with the wind, if it blows, you know, your legs, the shape of your legs might show. So I was like, oh my goodness, maybe he is right. Because honestly, I didn't know what living an Islamic life looks like. I'm like, okay, he's right. That's Islam, you know, and that's what I signed up for. You know, I knew he wanted an Islamic life. And then we come to the U.S., and I literally had, like, maybe four or five colors that I was allowed to wear, dark colors, no sandals, no makeup, no nail polish. Even sometimes I would put Aquaphor. You know what Aquaphor is? It's like, it's just like a little lip. It's not even for lips. It's like for your skin. When your skin is dry, you put a little bit of, like, Vaseline on it. I would put a little bit of Vaseline on my lips because they're so dry, and especially in this weather, like, it's so cold, your lips are extremely dry. Put a little bit of Vaseline. Vaseline is shiny, right? He'll be like, no, wipe it down, it's shiny.
It was every little thing, it seems like.
Yeah, it was. Even if I wore jewelry, he didn't want to say no because Islamically it is not haram. But somehow the attitude was just like, like, oh, why do you want to look fashionable? Why do you want to look put together? Like, the uglier I dressed and the messier I looked, the better he treated me. I have no idea why, but that was the case.
Mm-hmm. Was he ever romantic towards you?
With us alone? He was okay. He was romantic. He was okay. Because in the house, you know, I don't have to wear none of these. But if we go outside, he never held my hand in public. Never, ever. Never gave me a hug. Never kissed me, like, you know, on the forehead or, like, anything in front of his family. When we would go to visit anybody, he didn't really walk right next to me. So when we would go out, I just felt some type of way. I felt like, oh my God, like, why is he treating me like that? Oh my God, like, I just feel so abandoned. Or I felt like I was something embarrassing to him. Like, the way I felt, it was like, as if I was a sex object walking with him. And he just wanted to make sure that he takes that away from me. Like, you know, he doesn't want anyone to look at me. He doesn't want anything to show from me. He doesn't want my face to look pretty. So he just made sure for me to look as ugly as possible.
Goodness. So this is like the first few years of your marriage. This is the trend. This is your household culture.
So this is the first 4 years with like, you know, the colors and everything. And I was trying to, get him into allowing me to wear colors. It took him 4 years to convince him to actually be able to wear a scarf that has two colors in one scarf. And one time I remember I bought a scarf that was, it looked like a zebra print. It was white. It was black and blue, I think. And I buy it and I go home. And he flips at me in front of his mom and sister. And he holds the scarf. He was like, this is kufr. Like, you know what kufr means? Basically, you're going out of Islam for wearing this. You're going to go to hellfire for this. And I'm looking at his mom and I'm looking at his sister. And she's like, his sister was like, you know, he's right. I mean, like, I don't know much about Islam, but I don't know. I think he just really wants to make sure that you go to heaven. She doesn't wear the scarf, doesn't dress up modestly. If he ever said anything to his sisters, he was always told to leave the house. Like, he wasn't allowed in the house if he was going to make a comment about his sister wearing something that was provocative or something tight or whatever it may be.
Okay, wow. So there's already a double standard established between, you know, you, wife at the time and his own sister.
Like, I would go out with my ex-mother-in-law and my four ex-sister-in-laws, and the way I looked and the way he made me look and the way I felt, because I was so miserable that I barely smiled. I barely, like, I didn't walk with confidence. I felt and I looked, I was my mother-in-law's mother.
Goodness. So let me ask you this. When it comes to your happiness and your needs, how was that discussion made between you?
No, my happiness was all, he would always say, your happiness is within your own hands. You know, if you accept this life, you could be happy. As long as you're not accepting it, you're going to be miserable. So technically, you're bringing in, you're choosing that. This is not me doing that. This is me taking you from the darkness into the light. And you just don't want to accept it. So you choose your happiness. The happiness is only in this way of lifestyle. There is no other way of happiness. Literally, those words were told to me every single time I said, I feel this way or I want this way. And he'll be like, you are just so into lust and you're so into life and you're so into this. You're going to go to hellfire. I'm not going to accept this. And if you don't like this lifestyle, leave, get out. And one time I did, I got out and I remember calling my family and I'm like, I don't want to live with this guy anymore. He's too religious. See, the thing is, when you're so young, you don't even know how to explain things and you don't use the right terms. So I was calling an extremist a religious guy. So when I'm telling my family he's too religious, they're saying, okay, but being religious is a beautiful thing. We don't divorce men because they're religious. We divorce men because they're bad. We divorce men because they hit you, they mistreat you, they cheat on you, they're coming home drunk. But you shouldn't leave a man because he's religious. And I didn't know how to communicate. All I did was I would sit back and be like, okay, they're right. I'm wrong. I don't know any better. Maybe I'll change. I need to work better. I need to work on myself. So the gaslighting was from him, his family. And my family just didn't understand. Like, they would always tell me he's an awesome guy just because he didn't hate me. And just because he provided for me, you know, he rented a house and things like that. even though I think he was very cheap on me. Like he would give me like $100 every like 2 weeks, but he never bought me a gift on my birthday. Birthdays were not allowed. Anniversaries were not allowed. It was haram. You know, I wasn't allowed to go with his sisters to eat dinner for one of their birthdays because we don't celebrate birthdays. That's it. Like, people who celebrate birthdays are very misguided, and we're not going to do that. We're not going to contribute to that.
Birthdays are not a religious thing. No pagan religion or no monotheistic religion subscribe. Thinks that this is like a, birthdays are associated with any type of religion. But,
yeah,
you know, some people have a flawed way of thinking. So, you know, there seems to be a trend here, Arij. He's very strict on every frontier of your lifestyle, right? From managing the way you dress to how you interact with people, of how you move around in the world, to celebrating certain festivities. So it just seems like you are confined to a very strict role in his life, and it's only about the standards he sets in the household, and you have no input, not even in your own life.
To be honest with you, I felt like I was a slave to this man. Like, I lost my identity on so many levels. Like, I couldn't even grocery shop. I remember picking up few things sometimes from the store, and he would tell me to put them back. And those things were actually, like, very silly. They'll cost, like, $4. He'll be like, put it back. It's not on sale. And actually,
Dua, didn't you have a similar experience where you had to call him to buy certain things from the grocery store?
Yeah, I mean, it was something that happened pretty often, actually. It would be, if he was with me at the grocery store, then I had to, like, ask him for permission. And then if he wasn't with me, even if I was the one who was paying, if he wasn't with me, then I would have to call him and ask him for permission to buy things like fruits and vegetables and stuff. It was kind of strange. I mean, obviously, I realize that I'm not like giving much input in what's being said, or I'm not like contributing much to this conversation, but it's all too familiar. I've lived it as well, so I completely understand, and it's not something that I enjoy having to listen to, yeah. You know, so, but yeah, keep going.
Well, in my case, sometimes I would go grocery shopping by myself, right? But then I would have to keep the receipt. And then every time he looked at the receipt, he would look at me and he'd be like, oh my God, you don't know how to shop. Like, why are you buying apples for like $1.99 a pound? You don't buy apples if they're more than 69 cents.
It's like when a man just, like, you know, analyzes every little tiny thing that a woman will do, and then he continues to belittle her. That's the very reason why you felt like you lost your identity, is because he was forcing you to conform to the type of woman he wanted, and by nature, by default, you were not that woman.
Yeah, it was like a lot of things, a lot of silly little things. Like, for example, if I was by his family, and I would like see his brother, I'd be like, hi, how are you? When we get home, he'll be like, you are very flirty. Why are you telling my brother, how is he doing?
I disagree with you, Afroz. I don't think that it's something that it's like, oh, I want you to transform into this kind of woman. I think it's, even if she was to transform into this kind of woman, which she did and which I did, you know, like, at some extent you do end up just giving up, right? Because the fights are it gets so exhausting and it's so overwhelming and you just can't handle it. So at some point you start to give up, right? And you do end up like conforming to whatever it is the hell that they're asking you to do, which is like ridiculous anyway. But even when you get to that point, you do what they want you to do, it's not good enough. So it's not about them wanting you to be somebody that they, in their head, like this idealistic person in their head, it's simply just about control. Because once you have become that person in your head, it's still not good enough, and they'll still find things to complain about. They'll still find things to bitch about. They'll still find things to yell at you for. And it's simply just control and power. That's it.
Huh. Interesting. So, Arij, is that something that resonates with you?
I think she made a great point. I think no matter, like, I don't know, in my case, if I acted in a certain way where like I was dressing the way he wants and I was, you know, like making him food and catering to him and like, you know, just like acting like, oh my God, he was the best thing that happened to me. Somehow his treatment was better. But still like he was never nice enough in public. You know what I mean? Like he didn't mind at all telling me to shut up in front of his family. He didn't mind yelling at me in front of his family if I said something. Every time I came to speak, like let's say about Islam, if I came to say something, he would be like, no, you don't talk because you actually don't know. I don't know this, so you don't know it either. So if he doesn't know something, I'm not allowed to say it, you know? So many times he would tell me this, like, no, you don't, I don't know this, so I'm not sure about your information. And then he would go and ask at the mosque, and he'll be like, yeah, what she said is right. And he'll come back and he'll be like, yeah, I remember, like, this is, yeah, you're right. Ha, 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 ha. Like, he'll bring it in a way where it's like, oh, my God, like, his confidence is a little bit, like, kind of scratched now. And he hates it, but he wants to make sure that I know that he also knows.
So these are the micro habits that kind of come together and can potentially, you know, make a woman's life a living hell. So like let's forward to when you have children. How does life look like now?
Okay, so remember when I said I reached out to my family and I said I want to get a divorce because he's too religious. My family were like, no, you're not getting a divorce because he's religious. And my communication was just so bad. It was so bad with him. It was bad with my family. It was even bad to communicate with my own self just because I really didn't. Nothing made sense to me, but yet I didn't find the right term for everything. I didn't know how the world was working because I'm not exposed to the world, right? I'm just like,
let me ask you this, because what you're saying is making me, because what you're essentially saying is that you didn't know how to voice how you feel. You didn't know how to put it into words.
Yeah, I didn't know if how I feel was actually right or wrong, because I'm saying I feel this way and everyone else around me is saying you're wrong. The gaslighting was just on another level. You have a mother-in-law and a father-in-law and four sister-in-laws who are telling me what's happening to me is normal because this is marriage.
Goodness. So let's talk about education for a second. Would you say that, because I know you to be a very ambitious woman and a very smart one at that, would you say that perhaps there was a blockage in trying to for you to reach your full potential, you getting your education and, you know, the things that you wanted to do in life?
So when we actually did the Quran, like when we kind of like got the Islamic marriage certificate, I said I want something there written that I needed to complete my education.
You wanted that in your marriage contract, that you wanted to complete your education. So that was like a formal promise he had to keep up with.
When we got here, he sent me to a community college, and that's understandable because I came with no English, you know, like I had to learn English from scratch. So I was okay with going to a community college. That's fine. So I went, I learned the English, and then I got my associate's degree. And then after the associate's degree, I was like, okay, I want to go to Columbia College to get a bachelor's degree in this field that I love. And he was like, I'm not paying for them. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to pay for it. I don't know how. And he wouldn't allow me to take out a loan because he believed that loans were haram, even for education, because there is interest rates, right? So he wouldn't allow me to take out a loan. And somehow I was expected to pay for it with a $200 that he was giving me every month, which probably would cost me like just for transportation.
It's all bullshit. He didn't expect you to pay for it. He wanted to make it look like that because of your circumstances, you couldn't get an education. But really, it just sounds like the typical excuse. The man didn't want you to get an education because an educated woman is a threat to a man.
Yeah. So we had a daughter at the time, and I told him I could go like in the morning and I'll be back before you go to work, because he went to work at like 3 o'clock. But I think that the education stopped from his sister and his mother, because I remember we were in the car and I was like, yeah, I signed at Columbia College and I'm going to start next week. And literally his sister's face turned blue. She was like, yeah, my PhD program also starts next week. I'm thinking to myself, which PhD you're going to actually get from like an associate's degree? Like, you know, she was bullshitting. And then, after that, he told me, okay, you're not going, you're going to stay home. I'm not going to watch the baby. That's it. So I believe it was his sister and his mom. They kind of like, didn't even want him to allow me to get the education on my own, because I was actually, they gave me a, Columbia College gave me a scholarship because I had like a 3.9 GPA, and they offered me a scholarship for half of the amount. I only had to come up with, I think, $8,000. And I was like, I'll manage. I don't know. I'll ask my family. I'll sell some gold. Whatever it'll take, I'll do it, you know? So he was okay with me doing that as long as I'm not asking him for money. But somehow his mom and his sister really like convinced him that this is not a good idea and I shouldn't be going. Because of course his sister wouldn't want me to have a bachelor's when she has a two-year program degree, you know. Of course, like, she's just a witch. She's a witch.
This is why I'm saying why a man and his family may not want a woman to get a bachelor's. Why? Because two, with your sister in the equation, from what it sounds like you said, she doesn't want to feel deficient because she feels like she's in competition with you. And if you end up getting a bachelor's and she has an associate's, she's going to feel belittled by that for some reason, even though you're just living your own life. And it should not impact her life. Another thing is, when a woman is educated and starts earning her own money and starts earning her money in a way where she doesn't need to depend on a man, that is a threat to his status as a husband, because then she has ground underneath her feet to leave him easily. Like, no questions asked. Like, the resources are there.
I wouldn't say a threat to him as a husband. I think it's a threat to him being abusive and controlling, because a nice man can be a husband and, you know, he could support his wife into getting the education she needs.
It's a threat to someone who would be abusive. He would think to himself, yeah, oh, if I abuse her, but she's not educated, she can't leave me. I can do whatever I want. But if she is educated and I abuse her, then she can leave me. You see the difference? Because in sociology, they call this the independence effect. It's when women first started, you know, getting careers and stuff, and they were able to open their own bank accounts. And, you know, as women gained more and more independence and financial independence from their spouses through the legal system here in the United States, divorces increased. And in fact, 70% of divorces here in the U.S. are initiated by women. And majority of these cases are cited by, because men are too manipulative, they're too controlling, and oftentimes very abusive towards their wives.
No, I wanted to mention one more thing, is that actually from the moment that I got with him and I married him, he always gave me this feeling of, oh, like, why did you marry me? He was acting like, you know, he gave me something more than I deserve. And he made sure that I don't get my citizenship until I had my first kid. So, you know how when you get married, you could get your passport 3 years later? I got mine 7 years later. He like made sure that I don't get it. And one time I was like, should I get the citizenship? And he was like, why? Why? Did you marry me for that? Did you just marry me to take the citizenship and then leave? And then I was like, goodness, like, I could leave you and still get the citizenship. I'm in the U.S. I have the green card. I could go by my brother and get it. Like, what kind of man? Like, what are you thinking? Like, that's just like BS on another level. So he gave me the citizenship a year after I had my daughter. So my daughter was almost 10 months. And I had her like in 2014. And I got married in 2008. So 7 years later. Yeah, so there was no trust. Like, he always made me feel like I married him for like a reason other than me wanting to start a family, which was false. Like, all I wanted was to be with a good man and to start a family.
Right, because even that's really interesting, because in his mind, he's thinking that, from what I'm understanding, so what you're saying, what he's thinking is, if I give her, I'm under the assumption that this woman has married me for a green card. And if I give it to her right away after marriage or within the normal timeline, she's going to leave me. And you know that is very interesting that you say that. You know why? Because why would you think that if you did not know deep down inside you're abusing this person and that you have incentivized this person to leave? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's like, if you didn't incentivize this person to leave you because you're treating them so horribly, you wouldn't have had such a thought. You know, it wouldn't occur to you, this person may leave me for a green card if you're treating them so wonderfully. Now, granted, like, you know, it happens sometimes. People are scammers, but it happens on a much faster timeline. And I don't think most people would wait it out 3 years and let it drag on. They would just, you know, they would start cheating on you right away and find somebody else to get a green card with.
Yeah, so actually, you know, even after 11 years of marriage, that's something that was thrown in my face. Oh, you just married me for the citizenship. So it really, like, for me to take the citizenship, you think I'm going to stay with you for 10 years? In an abusive marriage and have two kids? Like, what are you thinking?
It makes absolutely no sense, right? Because if it was for the green card and it dragged on for 3 years before you got a green card, or more than that, right? Most people would have left within like the first or second year and would have cheated on them with somebody else who could give it to them faster.
Yeah, I just remember, like, sometimes I'll be sitting and I'll remember like stories that happened and scenarios and I'll be like, oh my god, that was insane. And actually I just yesterday I was thinking of this incident that I would like to mention. We were back home to visit and my sister was with me, and my sister and I, we were walking, and my ex-husband was actually in another city living by his family, and I was visiting my family. So I was like, okay, I'm away from him. I want to wear nail polish. So I put nail polish on my hands, and I'm walking, and then my niece comes running, and she was like, Jalto, your husband is here. She was like, my uncle, and then she said his name, is here. And my face dropped. And I'm thinking, oh my God, how can I get rid of this nail polish? I literally started eating the nail polish off my hands. Like, it was so painful. And I was doing it fast because I didn't want him to be like, why did she take long? And that was in front of my sister. I was eating the nail polish with my own teeth because I didn't have nail polish remover. I didn't have anything. And I didn't want, like, I didn't want him to yell at me and fight with me and look at me with disappointment and then not talk to me for the next 2 weeks. So that, imagine how traumatizing this is. Like, imagine how psychologically damaging that is for like a 21-year-old.
Goodness. Because you feel like every tiny detail of your life, it just seems like you have no control over. So of course, that frustration sounds very real and raw. Yeah. So... you know, you have this whole green card situation that he's trying to control so he doesn't get left. Because, you know, to a man, being left by a woman is a huge blow to his ego. And there's several studies that prove this, that it's interesting because society treats women more harshly for being divorced, but men have, you know, more of a, they react to being divorced more negatively than women do. So it's interesting to me how women are much more stronger with the divorce than men are, despite the fact that they have it harder than men. And this is like, you know, a fear that he's having this whole time. And so, you know, let's forward to when you do have children and how the controlling manifests in terms of raising kids. How, what is that?
So when I was pregnant with my first daughter, I remember I was extremely sick in my first trimester, to the point where I actually got an infection in my kidney. And I couldn't stand up properly. And I was like, I need you to take me to the hospital. And literally he was like, I'm at the gym. We'll see what we're going to do. Why are you going to go to the hospital now? We're going to sit in the ER for 4 hours. Like, what are you doing? And he's at the gym. He wouldn't leave the gym to come and take me to the hospital. I'm in so much pain. I'm literally like walking with my back bent, like really, really bad. Yeah, it was bad. Like I had to sleep on the floor for like 4 days because somehow when I slept on the mattress on bed, it just, the pain was really extreme. And when I slept on hardwood floor, it was a little bit easier. I don't know why. So I remember that. And then I remember like when I was, then the second trimester and third trimester, it was better. And I think it was my hormones. And I was just so excited to have a baby. I like, all of a sudden, I became so in love with him. I loved him. I was like, he's so awesome. He's so great. And I would tell people he's so nice. And I genuinely liked him at that point. Like, till I was going to the hospital to give birth. And it's funny because before I got pregnant, he had a dream, and the dream said, something bad is going to happen and something good is going to happen. And the first thing I find out is that I'm pregnant. So, okay, I'm pregnant. That's the good thing. And then actually 3 months after I find out that I was pregnant, or even 2 months, my dad passes away. So I was like, oh my God, your dream came true. And a true dream in Arabic means ru'ya. And I was like, do you think if we have a daughter, we should just name her Ru'ya? And he loved the idea. He's like, yeah, you know. And we were like, if we have a son, we're going to name after your dad. Just because his dad was really excited, whatever. And I wasn't opposed to the idea. And when I go and I give birth, he decides to name her after his mom. Without discussing it with me, he knew I didn't want my daughter to be named after his mom just because I didn't like her name. And it turned out, what I found out is that his mom and sisters spoke to him separately. They were like, yeah, I think it would really, like, you know, make mom sad to name your daughter something other than her name. So imagine I am right hours after I give birth, and I'm so happy, and I've done all the work. I was the one sick and throwing up in the morning and in the afternoon, and I was sleeping on hardwood floor. I gave birth. I was in pain, and then his mom comes and says, I want this child to be named after me, and boom, it's done. It's fucking...
be that's so pissed. That's
insane.
I'm so mad for you hearing.
Yeah, to be fair, he wanted to be fair. He gave my daughter the name that we decided on as a middle name. And after that, I was like trying to call her that name. I was like, Ro'ya, Ro'ya. And his mom and his brother, and not brother, his sisters were so mad. They would make sure to call her by her first name every time they saw me, just to bother me. And it wasn't the name that bothered me. It was just the concept that you don't get a say in this.
That's crazy.
You're carrying a child for 9 months in that aching pain, conceiving this child, and you had no say into what this child would be named. And they go behind your back after you've just given birth, and they name it something that you were not okay with.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. That is beyond. This is beyond appalling.
But it's like, I hate to say this, but it's just, it's also not surprising. It's like with all of the other things that you were talking about, like the mom and the sisters and stuff. And I completely understand it because I went through the exact same thing. And it's like, I don't understand why, you know, it's these men, you know, allow their mothers and their sisters to play such a huge role in their marriage. It's like, dude, like fucking man up. Either you're a man with your wife or you're a man married to your sisters and your mother. And if that's the case, then why the fuck did you get married?
I was married to him, to his dad, and to his mother and sister. His mother, I'm not gonna lie, his mother was nice to me in my face, but behind closed doors, she was very manipulative and sneaky. She is a really fake person. And it literally took me 8 years to realize that. 8 freaking years. And I'll tell you why. It would, like, sometimes I would fight with her daughter, and her daughter will call me names, and I'll be like, and I would tell my husband, your sister called me 1, 2, 3, and the mom will be like, no, she didn't. I'm like, what? That happened in front of you. Yes, she did. And she'd be like, no, I didn't hear her say them. And then one time my daughter was acting so bad. She was on the second floor, and she threw a bottle of dishwashing soap on my head. So I went up, and I wanted to talk to her. The mother-in-law and sister-in-law took her away from me. They didn't want me to even talk to my daughter. So I took my daughter, and I wanted to take her. I took her to the bathroom to just talk to her. I'm like, behave good, you know? And they were behind me. Oh, my God. Don't be scared. Oh, my God. Don't hit her. Don't hit her. Whatever. Like manipulating my child to make her scared of me. I am a mother. I have the right to be mad if my daughter is throwing heavy objects on my head. And if I want to discipline her in any way that I want, then I have the right. So I took my daughter and I'm leaving. I put her in the car. I was going to go. Like, I'm not going to put the seatbelt, nothing. My mother-in-law lifted her hand to hit me. And you know what? If she hit me, I probably wouldn't have hit her back. But after that, I told him. I was like, your mother lifted her hand to hit me. And she denied everything. So I knew after this, any serious conversation I'm going to have with her behind closed doors. And I did one time, I recorded her. Because I knew she was going to lie when I confront him. And I was going to have the recording of what she said. So I recorded her one time without her consent because I was sick of, like, the lying and the gaslighting and the manipulation. Like, I just, like, he didn't believe me. He never believed me. He always believed them. And they were always lying. And I'm somebody that doesn't lie. Like, I really don't. Like, I'm going to say the story the way it happened. Yeah, she actually lifted her hand with saying walak yil'an, like that means like God curse you or something like this, and she was like about to slap me or something like that.
All right, wow. Okay, so when it comes to raising your children, was there any conflict?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like when I was pregnant, I remember I went to the mall and I found this decal. And I remember it was on sale for like $9 from like $40 going into $9. You know how Kohl's sometimes will put like 85%. And the decal said, if I count my blessings, I count you twice. And I'm like, oh my God, that's how I feel about my child. Like, you know, I'm still pregnant and I'm going to buy it. And I'm going to put it right on top of the crib. So I buy it and I put it and I surprise him. I was like, look what I found. And he started screaming out of nowhere. Why are you bringing English decals into the house? I don't want my kids to speak English. I want my kids to understand the Quran and Islam and Arabi. You are an Arabic lady. Why are you bringing this? Why didn't you bring a decal that says Allahu Akbar? And I was like 9 months pregnant. I started crying. I was like, what the hell? Like, what? Like, is this guy normal? Like, is he normal? It was so disturbing. It was so weird and stupid and traumatizing at the same time. I didn't know what to say. I didn't answer back. I was like, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. And I sat on the couch and I was crying. And then that was it. That was it. Yeah, I didn't get a say in like sleep training. I wanted to sleep train my daughter. He wouldn't allow that because of sister and mother. Again, they don't want the baby sleep trained. They didn't care if I got any sleep or not. They had to make sure that I only exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months. And, it was just a control on another level. Even when my daughter was like 3 years old, I remember one time I bought her a dress that was like kind of showed her arms. And he flipped out. He was like, why are you buying my daughter's very provocative? Not, he didn't say provocative, but like, why are you dressing her up in like things that show her body? Like, are you serious? She's three years old. And one time she was wearing a dress with like an underwear underneath and he flipped. How come you don't have pants underneath the dress? I'm like, are you kidding me? She's a baby. Second, she's with me. Like, she's with me, for God's sake. Nobody's going to touch her. Nobody's going to come near her. And he'll be like, yeah, there's pedophiles out there. Like, that just doesn't make sense. Those are kids. Let them be kids. They're not sexy. They're not attractive. What do you think? What is this mentality? You're crazy. The divorce was just worse than ever. You know, he's saying that he's religious and he wants to live an Islamic life and all of these. So when I had enough of this bullshit, I was like, I'm getting a divorce. That's it. I called my brother. I was like, listen, I'm letting you know that very soon I'm going to be getting a divorce. You say yes, you say no, I'm getting a divorce. Every day I woke up and I prayed to God that today was the day that I'm going to leave this man. And sometimes I didn't have the courage. Sometimes I didn't have the money. Sometimes I didn't feel secure. Sometimes I didn't feel whatever, you know. But every single day I hoped for divorce. Every single day I thought of divorce. I just couldn't stand my life with this man because it was just so like, it was very, very cruel and very disgusting. And I was almost, I almost killed myself. So I started having suicidal thoughts and I was like, okay, this is not okay. This is not okay. I need to get a divorce. That's it. I sat with his mom. I was like, listen, I don't like your son. I hate your son. I need to get a divorce. And she said, oh, we love you. And, you know, if that's what you want, then we support you. Then the next thing I know is that they're hacking all of my social media accounts because they're accusing me of having an affair, right? So they hack my Instagram. They hack my Facebook. They hack my Snapchat. He would take screenshots of everything that I have, like of conversations between me and friends and things like that. Then when I said, that's it, I want a divorce, almost 6 months of him trying to convince me, please, let's work on it. I promise I'm going to change. And to me, like, even if you changed 180 degrees, even if you became the most generous man, because cheapness was also a big issue for me. He was very, very cheap. And if you became generous, if you wanted to make me live the life I wanted, I don't want you. At this point, I don't want you. You could be the last man on earth and I'm not going to look at you. That's it. So I'm stuck on the divorce. I said, okay, I want a divorce. That's it. So we're separated, but we still live in the same house. My mom is sick. That's in 2019. My mom is sick. My mom is one day in the hospital, one day at home. I was like, I need to go see my mom. My sister and her husband are going to see my mom. So I text him. I was like, listen, my mom is really sick. I want to go see my mother. I'm not going to take the kids because of two reasons. First, I don't want to be accused of kidnapping because he registered them on a federal website where, like, if you take a kid outside of the state and the father is not doesn't have consent, if you don't have consent from the father, basically, they're considered kidnapped. And I seen this come to his email one time by a coincidence. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna be smart. I'm not gonna be accused of kidnapping, and I'm only going for 2 weeks. And also, since I'm paying for it, I'm gonna go by myself, because if I'm affording $1,500 per ticket, I can't afford $5,000, right, for three of us. And I was like, listen, I'm gonna go for 2 weeks to see my mother. Altogether is 18 days, because it literally takes like 3 days to get there and 3 days to come back. And he said, yeah, that's fine. Go ahead. And he actually, in the text messages, he was like, yeah, that's fine, honey. And I'm like, I am not your honey. I'm soon to be your ex. Like, I'm going. Don't brainwash me. Don't gaslight me. Maybe he thought if I watch the kids, I let her go see her family, her mom, maybe she'll come back and she'll see me as a great guy. You know, like, you're not doing me a favor by watching your kids. So I go, I see my mom, and the only reason I went, and I didn't focus on the divorce at that moment, because I knew my mom wasn't going to make it. My mom actually didn't make it. I went in July. My mom died 4 months later. Like, I knew my mom wasn't going to make it into 2020. I just knew. I was like, I have to see her one last time. So I go, and 2 days before I come back, I get an email from his lawyer saying that he filed for divorce. And I was like, okay, great, you know, great. That's good. That's a step, you know. That means he's giving up and we're getting a divorce. Great. So I come home, and it was Eid. I come home literally at night, a day before Eid. So he brings my daughters to see me for 1 hour, and then he says, I'm having a party for them. I'm going to take them by my family. I was like, okay, take them and bring them back. I don't see them for 2 days. I'm like, I want my kids. I'm texting him. I'm like, please don't do this. Please don't take the kids. Please, 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 please. He's not responding. When he responds, he'll be like, please respond to my lawyer. And I was like, okay. So I had to look online for schools where, like, they might be going. I'm calling every single school in the area. And then I find them. And then I go. And I'm, like, by the school by 7:30 a.m. I'm like the first one there, ready to just see my daughter. Haven't seen her for 3 weeks. And then when I come back a week, you're not showing me my daughter. So that's like, what, a month not seeing my daughter. So, and the baby, I literally had weaned her like 2 months before I left. The baby was really attached to me. And I heard from family members that they were crying all the time. They wanted me, especially the baby. And they would tell the family, and the family would be like, haram, give the kids back to their mom. They'll be like, no, the lawyer told us not to. They just love to play like angels, and they're just following the rules. I'm like, bullshit, because the lawyer doesn't tell you. The lawyers usually follow what you want. So I go, and I see my daughter comes running to me. And then she's like, mama, please take me. I want to come with you after I'm done. And I took out my phone, because at this time, the mosque, the imam of the mosque was involved in our issue, and he was trying to solve it. And he was already texting my ex-husband, give the kids back to their mother, and he's not responding. I took out my phone to film my daughter saying, I want to come with you, I want to come with you. I wanted to show it to the lawyer. And out of nowhere, he grabs my hand with the phone. And I had, like, you know how you have that grip where you could put your finger on the back of the phone so the phone doesn't fall? He grabs it and he twists my hand and my arm, which was so painful because there was a piece of metal around my finger. He goes and squeezes my hand. And I'm like, what are you doing? With, like, a loud voice. And, you know, his immediate reaction was picked up the girl. He was like, oh, my God, why are you screaming at her? And I'm like, I am not screaming at her. I'm screaming at you. You just grabbed my arm and twisted it. And I was so upset at this point, right? The kids went to the classroom, and I'm like walking. I'm so mad. And I'm like, look, motherfucker, I have nail polish. You extremist asshole. I actually tried to go to the court to get a restraining order. And I go in, and the security guard tells me, what are you here for? I'm like, I need an order of protection against my husband. He was like, do you have a court order? No, do you have a divorce case? I was like, yes. He was like, most likely the judge is going to let you go home. Because when you have a divorce case, most likely people are lying. You need to get your lawyer with you. I was like, Khalas, it's not meant to be, whatever. I'm going to go home. You know what? I'm going to go to school. I'm going to get my daughter. And nobody's going to tell me no. Because those are my daughters that I raised and I was with. I was with them every 24 hours a day. So I'm going on the way to school. I get in a car accident. Out of nowhere, I'm like, oh my God. This guy hits me out of nowhere. My car is like so damaged. And I'm crying because, like, oh, my God, I want to go get my daughter. I'm not thinking of the car. I'm thinking, oh, my God, my chance of picking up my daughter from school is gone. And literally when I'm standing to get a rental car an hour later, the school calls me and they're like, is this a reach? I'm like, yeah. They were like, if you come around the school within 100 feet, we will be calling the police and you will be taken by the police. You can't come. We have an order of protection against you. You can't be around the kids and you can't be around the school. So he wouldn't put an order of protection against me. He's saying that I abandoned my kids and I went to Turkey. I didn't go to see my mom. So he said, I went to Turkey. I abandoned the kids. He didn't know that I was leaving. And he lied to the judge when he actually swore under oath that he didn't have a divorce case, which ended up biting him in the ass later. So, okay, he takes the kids, and I have an order of protection. I can't see my kids. And then we get an appointment with the court 2 months. So 2 months, I'm sitting, I'm crying. I'm like on the floor, dying from pain. Like, I want my kids. Like, I haven't seen them. I just want them. And then I get a court order. I'm like, okay, perfect. A court date. I'm sorry. I got a little emotional. So we go to court. And because of all of the accusations he was doing against me, saying I'm mentally ill, I was suicidal, I abandoned the kids, I'm not a fit mother, he's scared for his life, he's scared for the kids' life. He even threw himself down the stairs, called the cops on me one time, and it didn't work out. He was trying to get me in trouble to lose custody so bad, so many things.
It would be very hard to believe, because I know what you look like in real life.
Let me tell you the scenario when he, I swear to God that I did not push him down the stairs. I swear on my mother. I swear on my kids. Because I know people might be like, this woman might not be innocent either. But let me tell you, I did not push this man. And the way he actually fell down the stairs, it was like as if you had a tire and you just slid it down the stairs. He was rolling. If you push somebody, they're going to go face first. They're not going to roll to protect their neck. And then literally he got up and called the fucking cops on me and called his family. So the cops come downstairs. It's him laying down on the floor saying, ow, ow. And then his family all around him, his father, his mother, all of his sisters and his brother and uncle, whatever. And I am upstairs alone holding my daughter, scared. And his mom is yelling at me from the door. I hope God does 1, 2, 3 to you. So the cops see this.
Okay, so when you both had, at this point, when he's accusing you that you pushed him down the stairs, your divorce process had been discussed or at least begun.
Oh, yeah, we were separated for a while. So... he goes to the hospital, comes the second day with his grandfather and an imam from a mosque. And he says, I want my wife back. I don't want to divorce her. So you're accusing me that I just pushed you down the stairs. He fell down the stairs or pushed himself down the stairs, whatever the fuck he did. Literally like 8 hours later, he comes with his grandfather and says, I want her. I want to stay with my wife. And I'm like, no, I don't want you. I don't want you. And when I say the reasons why I don't want him to his grandfather, his mom is standing, Allahu Akbar, she'll be like, she's lying. She's lying. I'm like, you are not in my bedroom. I'm saying very private things. And she's saying I'm lying. And then to find out later that he was recording every single conversation between me and him. Every single conversation. One time he forgot his phone and I opened it. And I don't know how he didn't change his passcode. And I opened it and there were at least 18 recordings. And it was, he would do it on a video, he would go to film a video and he'd put it in his pocket and come to talk to me. Because he wanted to tell people what she's saying, she's lying. But the thing is, I was so consistent. The things I said in front of people and the things I said to him, that story didn't change. So he wasn't able to use the recordings and anything.
So you're going through this divorce and it's almost as if the day that you had that car accident had, it was like a blessing from God. Because if you hadn't been in that accident, your husband would have had his wedding.
No, and also if probably I didn't get into the car accident and went to school to get my daughters, if they were going to say no to me, I probably would have made a scene and I had an order of protection against me. I probably would have been taken to by the police or the cops would have been called on me. And that would have been like a dark spot in front of the judge and in court against me. So I think it is a blessing. Yeah. So we get a court date. And then since he was accusing me of a lot of things, the judge said we have to hire an investigator, basically, or a lawyer assigned for the kids. So I had my own lawyer, he had his own lawyer, and the kids had a lawyer. So now I'm paying for two lawyers because the lawyer for the kids, we're paying for it. He's paying 50 and paying 50%. And they're really expensive. They're like $300 an hour. And it took her 10 months to be able to really understand what's going on. She had to come to the house. She had to go to the school. She had to talk to my daughter. She had to see how my daughters reacted when they saw me. She had to like call family members. So it's funny, when I would get my the invoices from her, she had talked to him, to his sister, to his mother, to his grandfather, to their aunt, to weird ass people that I've never heard of, to different lawyers. He gave her so many people to talk to be against me. And on my list, it was literally two people, my brother and the imam of the mosque. And then I only had two people. And she was like, okay, that's good enough for me to give her shared custody. So now this lady is spending hours and hours talking to people that he's recommending and he's asking her for. And then she said, this is not fair. She actually submitted a report to the judge saying that everything he said about her was an accusation. No, this girl is a fit mother. She's not suicidal. I went to a psychiatrist. I got evaluated. I got letters. I got a letter from the library saying that I am an active mother with my kids every Tuesday and Thursday. We go to story time. We go to craft day, and I threw a party for the kids for Eid, and I started the Ramadan program for them at the library. And I got so many references from like not family members, so I wasn't biased. And the judge said, okay, shared custody, and you know what, you're gonna refund her every single dollar she paid for the GAL, because the kids were not supposed to be taken away from the mother, and you have made a lot of accusations that, okay, you're going to refund her that. So So I got to see my kids only for 6 hours a week for 10 months. That was really hard. And then after that, they were able to come by me and sleep weekends and weekdays and, you know, half of the time. And I mean, he was very religious, but when it came to the divorce, he didn't want to follow the religion at all. He didn't give me my...
We would not strip the children of their mother like that, or would at least attempt to.
And not even that, like, they made so many ugly rumors about me. Oh, she's getting a divorce because she has a boyfriend. Oh, she's a lesbian. Oh, she was a bad wife. She never cooked for me. In fact, he had never bought a meal from outside. He had never bought a meal when he was working. I would go drop him food when it was snowing, when it was raining, when it was hot, when I had to pick up two kids and go send him food. He lied about me. So when he left and I had to go to court, he took the car, he took the money. I had nothing. Thank goodness I had $6,000 saved up. I started with $6,000, went and bought a car, got a job, asked them, please, please give me more hours. Every single dollar I was making, it was going to lawyers. And I literally survived on credit cards. I had to buy food on credit cards. I had to put gas on credit cards. I had to fix my car that had damage from the car accident on credit card. And I had a card that the limit was $25,000. It was maxed out within a year. So I had to survive on credit cards, and every single dime I'm making, I'm paying to lawyers to be able to get my daughters. And yet they're sitting and telling people she's throwing her daughters. She doesn't want her daughters.
So, you know, after this whole divorce battle is, you know, kind of going on, was there a moment in which you felt like a sense of relief where you just broke down and cried or anything like that where you were like, wow, I can't believe that, you know, I'm finally divorced and I still have my daughters after all of this?
But then when I got my daughters, I'm like, thank goodness, alhamdulillah, I am a very lucky person. I was able to escape and still get to keep my daughters, because that battle would have been so ugly. You know, if God wasn't standing with me, I probably would have acted very irrationally and taking my daughters and went by my brother, or I just was going with my emotions. And the court system here is really tough. Sometimes they don't really side with a woman just because she's a woman. Now they kind of want dads to be involved as well. And I know people I know women who have lost their kids because they were accused of kidnap. And thank goodness I knew of this story, because I knew that I wasn't going to take my daughters anywhere because of that. So thank goodness, you know, I got to keep them. And I ended up spending almost $40,000 to $50,000 with lawyers. I spent a lot trying to fight for my daughters. And then I had to pay him also his share of the condo to leave. And I just bought the condo to just keep, like, you know, the house that the girls grew up in. And they know I didn't want so many changes for them. So now, alhamdulillah, I am great. I am, like, even though what I went through was so hard and tough, but freedom is so priceless that it makes it worth it. And honestly, it just makes me, whatever I went through makes me appreciate everything in life. Now I appreciate my freedom. I appreciate my health. I appreciate good vibes. I appreciate happiness. So you're not going to see me dwelling and being negative on the stupidest things.
Wow. Like, I don't think about my freedom because I've always had it. Whereas you do. Like, you value this a lot because you didn't have it for so many years.
Like, it just, I watched few shows on Netflix and I could relate. And I know some people might watch something and they'll be like, no, this is not in the world. Like, for example, The Handmaid's Tale. I don't know if you have watched this show, A normal person will be like, this is not real life. This is too extreme. But honestly, I could relate because their freedom is taken away from them just because they're women. And my freedom was taken away from me because I was a woman. I wasn't allowed to speak. I wasn't allowed to choose my attire. I wasn't allowed to choose friends. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere I wanted unless I had permission. If I wanted to leave the house from my house to grocery shopping, I had to get a permission. I had to call and say that. It was just crazy. Like, and also, like, at the very end, I was so sick of it that I was started, like, living a double life a little bit. I was like, okay, you want me to wear the jilbab, or you want me to wear this, whatever? Okay, I'll wear it. I'm going to get out with it. And then in the car, I'm going to take it off and I'm going to keep my pants and my long shirt on. And my long shirt was up to my knee. But to him, that was like so provocative. That was so sexy and so shameful that you're not allowed to wear that.
Well, I will say this, Areej, and just to our audience in general, a woman from Palestine who was denied her, you know, education that was promised to her on her wedding day, who, you know, was denied any control of her life, even in the macro facets of her life and micro facets in terms of attire to, you know, big decisions and having access to her own daughters, to naming her daughters, and the fact that you still pulled through, and you're a woman today, you know. And you have your daughters and you push through this divorce with the amount of bravery that you have is just awe-inspiring. And I hope it inspires a lot of women out there. And mind you, like I said, you are a woman from Palestine who didn't even know English. And you walk around in this world as if, like, you know, like divorce does not define you, you know, like you define you. Usually Dua does the words of wisdom, but what words of wisdom do you have for all the women out there?
I just want to say that, you know, you being a woman doesn't make you a second class citizen. You have to believe and know that you are just as equal to a man. And please do not accept abuse. Please, if you feel like your relationship or your marriage feels wrong and you don't have kids, please, please get out before you do, because it does affect the kids in a way. It is hard for the kids. But alhamdulillah, I'm very blessed to have kids. And I also want to say to the men too, please listen to what the woman has to say. Please understand. And do not be too controlling, because when you control so much, you're literally just adding pressure to a bomb that's going to explode in your face. I'm telling you, when a woman is having enough and when she has enough, she's not going to stay. She's going to walk away. She'd rather stay on the street than staying with an abusive man or a man who doesn't respect her wishes or actually cares to understand how she feels. So that's all I had to say. And also, I just wanted to say one more thing, is that I believe the way I was able to pull through, it was literally just God was standing with me. And I believe God standed with me because God stood with me because my mom was on her deathbed. And she was making dua for me. She was asking God to help me through it, praying for all of us. And my brothers were amazing. They supported me emotionally and financially and everything I needed. So alhamdulillah, you know, I have a great family. And even if a woman doesn't have family, please do not stay in an abusive relationship. And God bless all of the women up there.
Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Areej, so much for joining us. This has been a very eye-opening story that I hope that will be an inspiration to a lot of women out there. And you coming on our podcast today and telling your story, inshallah, makes a huge difference, and I know it will. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next week, we'll be talking about the cultural views on homophobia in the Muslim world. And it'll be definitely a controversial topic, but we hope to do it justice by talking about it in a way in which most Muslims can see it from a different point of view and kind of understand where a lot of the sentiment comes from. Thank you all for joining us. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.